Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Dakota's wanted to be military since he was 7 years old. I mean, a lot of children, they change their career paths. Well, Dakota never did. He was 7 years old, decided he was going in the military, and that never, ever changed. I mean, it was just something that he wanted to do. So, you know, I still love the military. I love our soldiers, and I want to protect them. I feel like they're not protected right now, and especially at Fort Hood, something's going on.
We loaned Dakota to the military. You know, it was an opportunity for him to grow up, become a man, to mature. We expected him back. We still knew that he could possibly die in, you know, a skirmish overseas. But we never expected that he would come up missing and then we would be treated so poorly and then information about his death would be hidden from us.
On October 10th, 2016, 19-year-old Army Private Dakota Lee Stump disappeared from the Fort Hood Army base where he was stationed in Texas. Not much was done by military officials to find Dakota because they considered him AWOL. They believed that he'd left on his own and returned home to Indiana. When they did ping his phone, Army officials gave Dakota's family the ping locations in Indiana, which sent them on a wild goose chase trying to find him. Later, the Army would change their stance and say that Dakota had been on base all along. There are many mysterious circumstances surrounding Dakota's disappearance, and his family and friends are wondering what really happened to him and who they can trust. The ever-evolving story that Army officials have told just doesn't quite add up. Is this a case of incompetence or something else entirely? I'm Marissa, and this is episode 104 of The Vanished, the story of Dakota Stump's disappearance. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Growing up in the suburbs of Indianapolis, Indiana, Dakota had dreamed about joining the military since he was just 7 years old. In the spring of 2016, that dream became a reality when he enlisted in the Army. He graduated from basic training in July and was assigned to Fort Hood. As far as anyone could tell, everything seemed to be going well for Dakota. He had a girlfriend who lived locally and spent much of his free time with her, or hanging out with his fellow soldiers. On September 15th, Dakota took a short leave to attend his brother's wedding. This was the first time that his family had an inkling that something wasn't quite right. I spoke to Dakota's mom, Patrice, for this episode, along with her fiancé, Paul, who knew Dakota for many years. Patrice told me about Dakota's trip back to Indiana for the wedding.
His older brother was getting married in September, before he went missing. And so Dakota spent a couple days with us to be there for his brother's wedding. And I just feel like it's very important to talk about this because when he first arrived off the airplane, we noticed that we were looking at and talking to a different Dakota. When he was in basic, we made sure that we visited with him 2 times, and he was absolutely Dakota. He was, you know, in great spirits, very dedicated to the military, very excited about his future. You know, he's always wanted to be a grown-up and, you know, take care of his own responsibilities, and he was just on that path of doing that. He purchased his own car, got his own insurance, was paying his own cell phone bill. So, you know, he was just excited. He was very excited about life. But when he came home in September, he arrived on the 15th, he was just very distant to the whole family. And this was a huge wedding in downtown Indianapolis. So, you know, everybody was here. All the family was here. Family members that helped raise him, mold him, you know, family members that he looked up to. He just was very, very distant. And him and his brother at the wedding rehearsal dinner got into somewhat of an altercation. And then the next day at the wedding, Dakota again just seemed very distant and just wanted to kind of hang out with his friends. And that the last time that I saw Dakota was when he was leaving the wedding. And he's never, we always, you know, we're very, very close. We always told each other that we loved each other, but it was just okay. I love you. But this was different. He's never done this before. He grabbed me and he said, "Mom, I love you." And I, you know, I said, "I know, Dakota, I love you too." And he grabbed me again by both of my shoulders and he looked me dead in my eye and he says, "No, Mom, I love you." And that was the last time I saw him. He was getting, his friend was taken to the airport that next very early morning, and we could not get a hold of Dakota. I was worried he missed his flight. You know, he's going to get into trouble or something if he was late. But we didn't realize that his phone had no charge. And so even his brother was worried about him. So he starts texting him. And just being a brother, you know, we've called and texted. His brother sent him a text that says, "Dude, are you dead?" And as soon as his phone got charged and he texted his brother back, we still have this text. He texts back to his brother stating, "No, but I will be when I get back." And that was on September 18th, and Dakota went missing on October 10th.
No one thought too much about Dakota's comment because sometimes people use that phrase very casually, like, "I'm going to be dead when my parents find out I did this," or something along those lines. It wasn't until after he went missing that they thought back to that text message.
Until he went missing, we thought that he meant that, you know, "Oh, I'm going to be in trouble because, you know, I'm going to be late," or, you know, something to do with the military, because, you know, we'd been through basic with him and he was very, very on edge about getting in trouble. You know, he didn't want to get in trouble for anything. So we just thought maybe something, you know, something was going on. Maybe he wasn't telling us that he caught a later flight. You know, maybe he was going to be in trouble, but nothing like that happened. There was no trouble, but we never talked about that text again. I did talk to him when he arrived in Texas, and he told me he was sorry for the weekend. Just, I think, because he knew that he was acting very distant from us. I just didn't want to push it. You know, I knew he was under a lot of pressure. He was very stressed out because they had to go out in the field. If I remember correctly, I think he had to go out in the field for 20 days, which is, you know, at night you're sleeping in the cold and it's pretty much just practicing like you're deployed, you know, you're doing live rounds. And even though it's Texas and it's warm, it gets cool, very cool in the evening because it was October. We text back and forth, but I knew that while he was out in the field, I didn't know when was a good time to call. You know, he didn't call me, but we were texting back and forth and he couldn't wait until, you know, his field was over.
Beginning on Friday, October 7th, Dakota took part in a multi-day field exercise. On the 10th, they were given a 4-hour break, which is called a refit. This is a time that they're allowed to go back, do their laundry, shower, and relax for a short period of time. It was during this refit that Dakota disappeared.
That is actually when he disappeared, was during that 4 hours. We were not notified until October 11th at 8:55 a.m. in the morning that he was missing. His sergeant sent a text to Dakota's aunt, who the reason he stated he notified her, even though I'm the person, you know, I'm his mom, and they have that on record, is because she had the same last name and they just went on Facebook and found her. She in turn notified me 5 minutes later that Dakota had been missing since he was supposed to be back at formation at 9:50 p.m. on October 10th. You know, there was a lot of time that had went by, and we just immediately, you know, I felt like something was not right. They immediately started treating him as being AWOL, which AWOL basically, a lot of people think it's a negative term, that AWOL means that you're just out goofing around. You know, you didn't show up to your work and you're out, you know, messing around with your friends and you're going to be in a lot of trouble. But AWOL basically just means that you are not at your designated post. You're not where you're supposed to be. So AWOL just means that basically you're missing. They don't know where you are. So I thought it was a negative term, but going through this for the last over a year, I have learned that AWOL just means that you're absent. They immediately started treating Dakota as if he had ran off. They believed that he got into it with a girlfriend or he was drinking alcohol and just decided that he wasn't going to show up for work. And we knew that that wasn't like Dakota. So we immediately started texting and calling. We did get in contact with the sergeant and his captain during that day. And we begged them to, and even his girlfriend's mom, you know, we all asked them, my mother asked them, can you please look at the surveillance cameras to make sure that, you know, Dakota didn't have an accident? Because we just knew that just wasn't like Dakota. We stayed in contact with them to see what they were doing on their end to look for Dakota. And we later found out that their search efforts for days was basically going to his barracks to search for him, going to his friend's barracks, checking parking lots on base for his car, and going to different areas or lakes or, you know, that the soldiers hung out at. That was the extent of their search.
So in essence, if somebody's missing or if they're AWOL, in the classic terminology of AWOL, meaning that you've done runoff, that's an investment that they've made in the soldiers. So you would think that they would do, you know, look at these videotapes and see when he left the base. They didn't do that at all. They said that would, you know, be too expensive, cost them, you know, too much in man hours, et cetera. But they did tell us that they went to the bowling alley and they went to the, you know, the post exchange or what have you to see if he was hanging out there. But, you know, in my mind, if somebody's AWOL in quotes, then they aren't going to be just hanging out in a normal open area. They would be, you know, trying to, you know, be hidden, so to speak.
We in turn, and yes, as far as the cameras, they quote unquote told us that will take some time. And so in our minds, we kind of felt like they were going to look at the cameras, but we later found out that we were told there weren't really cameras that they could look at in that area, which was very, very hard to believe being on a very big base like that.
They searched his barracks, but didn't find any clues that pointed to where he may have gone.
When they searched his barracks, they said that there was kind of, you know, clothes strung all over the place. His charger was in his drawer, and he had $300 in his room. That $300 overnight turned into $500. And then when we received his personal belongings, that $500 actually turned into $600. So we were kind of unclear on where they were getting, you know, that information. We didn't know what to do. We just kept calling and of course, Paul and myself. We didn't want to believe that Dakota would not show up to work. We were very concerned.
Friends and family were very concerned about Dakota since this seemed so out of character for him. We all know that military life can be very stressful, so everyone was hoping that maybe he just needed to clear his head. So they kept calling with the hope that he'd pick up.
We just did everything we could as far as trying to reach out to him. His phone was still on, and I want to make sure that I mention this because I feel like it's very important. His phone actually stayed on for 6 days. It stayed on until Sunday morning when we had visitors from the Army in our home. It was explained to us that that happens sometimes, that these new phones just stay on for 6 days, which we did some research on that, and we can't believe that it would stay on for 6 days.
Especially with everybody calling him. I mean, you imagine that we've got a pretty large family, plus he's got a great, you know, large friend base. So if your phone is constantly ringing because everybody's calling you, I just can't fathom that it, you know, stays charged and active for 6 days.
Yes. So that's what we did for the day, is we just was trying to reach out to him and thought, you know, maybe something happened. Maybe he got into it with his girlfriend or, you know, gosh, who knows? Who knows? You know, Dakota's a good kid. You know, he'll get it straightened out.
2 days after Dakota disappeared, they noticed something strange had happened. It appeared that he had uninstalled Facebook Instant Messenger from his phone.
We actually had something really strange happen. One of his very good friends reached out to us, and we noticed that his Instant Messenger on Facebook was actually uninstalled. Dakota would have to do that. You know, somebody or Dakota uninstalled his Messenger on the 12th, which we thought was very, very strange because everybody was trying to contact him through every avenue that we could think of, and his phone would just ring. Finally, his voicemail, you know, got full. People were just trying to reach out to him on instant message, and then, like I said, it was uninstalled.
Also on the 12th, Dakota's family was contacted by a retired military police officer who offered to help them find him.
We were also contacted, thank God, by someone who is a retired MP. And this is what she does. She's done over 100 cases, and she helps families of missing soldiers find their soldier. And also, because of all of the roadblocks that you run into on filing a missing persons report, especially with a military person, she guided us in that direction because we were only being told that we could not file a missing persons report until his command issued him or labeled him as AWOL on paper. That was never done until the 16th of October when we got the media involved because we could not get any help from the local police departments. They would just direct us back to the military, and we weren't getting anywhere with the military. The MPs wouldn't even deal with us until Dakota's command had sent over the proper paperwork. And it just was nothing was being done. It's just like everything, it was just like he was out here. They made it appear that he was AWOL. He's out here running, and we think he's going to come back. So, but we felt differently about that.
This retired military police officer was able to get in contact with the friends that Dakota had been with during his four-hour refit. She interviewed the two men, and her notes have proven to be invaluable.
She actually started reaching out to the people that we knew Dakota was hanging out with during his four-hour break to get statements from those two guys. And it's very, to me, it's a huge inconsistency in the case because she took very good notes, and we discussed it on a daily basis of how, you know, they said that there was a Snapchat video right after he would have gotten out of the field in his car. But what was so amazing about the Snapchat video is there's a person in the back seat and a person in Dakota's car in the driver's seat, which you would think would be Dakota. And Dakota, if you check out his Facebook, he was always taking videos of himself and taking pictures of himself. I mean, the kid looked great. I mean, he had lost, like most soldiers do, you go through basic and you just beef up, you know, you lose all this weight. And he was he was really, I mean, he was proud of himself, and so was I. And his self-esteem level had went up, and, you know, he's just always on Facebook, and he had so many friends. And for you to not see the person who is on Snapchat taking this video, they never show their face. You can't see their hands. There's no talking. So you can't really tell that it's Dakota. There's just this kid in the back seat. And we saw that. And then after we got all these statements, those kids are stating that a 23-year-old private soldier actually bought alcohol for my son and another 19-year-old. And Dakota supposedly gave him his bank card, which is very unlike my son to do that, and told this, we'll just say private number one, the 23-year-old, to go in and take out $20 to $40, this was his own words, and to buy one bottle of New Amsterdam, which I had to do research on that. I didn't know what it was, and we later found out that transaction was actually that private number one took out $80 out of Dakota's account, and it was the last transaction on his bank statement. Now, when CID finally got to questioning these two privates and his platoon sergeant, who is not only the last person that Dakota reached out to at 9:42 before he went missing, basically all of their statements are inconsistent, because what they told us and then what they told CID, everything is different. They told CID that they bought a bottle of Pinnacle, which I know that is vodka. So they told them they bought Pinnacle and they were sitting around drinking and playing video games, and Dakota lost his keys and he was in a hurry and everybody was calling each other. And then Dakota sped off to make this 2-minute drive back to his formation. He was supposed to be there at 9:50.
We know from Dakota's phone records that his last call that night was from a platoon sergeant. He was supposed to be back at 9:50 p.m., and this call came in just minutes earlier at 9:42 p.m.
He received a phone call at 9:42 from a platoon sergeant that he had got into an altercation with. And I didn't get the whole story on that, but it sounded like it got physical because Dakota had questioned his leadership. And Dakota has always been the type of kid that he roots for the underdog. He's always going to stick up for people. If he thinks that you're not being a good role model in that situation, I'm pretty sure that's probably what happened. He questioned his leadership skills and the guy did not like it. And they got in each other's faces and it got physical. And this is the last person that is known to Dakota called him. It appears on his way to formation, and that gentleman called him back. He gave 3 different statements pertaining to that phone call, because we actually called him and he didn't know who we were, and we totally caught him off guard. And he told us that it was a very short conversation, and we were trying to reach out to him once I got Dakota's phone records, because we wanted to see if he talked to Dakota. We knew Dakota was still alive and well at that time. He told us it was a very short conversation. So I had a lot of hope, you know, that Dakota was, you know, okay, you know, at 9:42. But then he later told me, when he knew who I was, I sent him an instant message and he finally replied to me after a few days and told me that he never talked to Dakota, that he had answered the phone and nobody was there, and that he called Dakota back and didn't get an answer. So it was a completely different story that he told me when he knew it was me. And then he told CID something different about the phone call. So there was 3 different comments about that last phone call. He was very upset that we had found out. You could tell by his, when I heard his voice the first time that we reached out to him, he was very upset that we had learned that he was the last phone call. So anyway, that's what happened on the 12th. After we got statements from everybody, it's like a gag order was put on all of Dakota's soldier buddies. Anything to do with Dakota, if it was military, no one would speak to us. The captain quit reaching out to us. The sergeant wasn't reaching out to us. I mean, I pretty much felt like that we were on our own, you know, as far as Dakota. And we were just hoping that he'd either hurry up and get back, because we thought Manny's going to be in so much trouble for not showing up to formation, or he better hurry up and get to Indianapolis and let's work this out.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. I mentioned cell phone pings in the beginning of this episode, and those pings are one of the most bizarre aspects of this case. 3 days after Dakota disappeared, the military police started pinging his phone. They provided Dakota's family with coordinates of different locations where his phone had pinged. Thinking that Dakota had left the military and may be hiding out, Patrice and Paul went looking in these areas for Dakota or his black Mustang.
Finally, on the 13th, 3 days later, they finally got paperwork over to the MPs to classify him as AWOL. They actually started working the case. So I got a call from the lead detective on Dakota's case. And I was told by him that, you know, they were doing everything they could do. They were pinging his phone and he was in Indianapolis. And they gave us coordinates. But I'll let Paul explain what they did to us with those coordinates. But what I was going to tell you about the lead detective, I knew that we were in trouble and that we were on our own when that lead detective told me, here's my cell phone number, but do not call me on Saturday. And this was on the 13th. Don't call me on Saturday because the Texans are playing. I knew that we were on our own. They really did not give. They didn't care, and they didn't think that anything was a big deal. And they told me he's in Indianapolis, and basically he's AWOL, and he's just out here messing around and, you know, being a 19-year-old. And we knew better. But I'll let Paul explain the coordinates, because I was totally confused on it.
It's almost, just what happens in a lot of the cases I hear from, when I listen to your show, that, the police just assume, or they start with a premise, and then they just go off that. They don't look at anything else. You know, when there's $500 in a young man's room, 19-year-old kid, you don't just take off and leave your $500, you know. Nobody just rolls out and says, well, that $500 is gone. I don't need that any longer, especially if you're going to be running. But anyways, they'd given us these coordinates where they were pinging his phone. And the counties in Indiana are all built off of a grid system. So if you were at, you know, the courthouse in Indianapolis, well, that would be 0-100 east, 0-100 north, you know, just 0-100. If you went 1 mile south, it'd be 100 south, 1 mile east, 100 south, 100 east. So if somebody gives you coordinates off of these county roads, well, that could be in any county here in the state of Indiana. Because the coordinates, you know, unless they tell you the city in, that these coordinates are located in, then you're not going to, you know, you're not going to know. So when he told us the coordinates were, what were they, 200?
2042 Kittley, and that was one coordinate, and south 600 west and west 250 south.
Yeah, so when they told us south 600 west and west 250 south, that means that we would have to, you know, we just started driving to counties, you know, driving around and going to every county we could find those coordinates on, because sometimes it would be a, if it's a bigger city than that, there would be a street name associated with that. So by having those coordinates, then we just started trying to find counties with, you know, within Indiana that had those coordinates. But they gave us so many different addresses that were consistent with, well, places that Dakota might know somebody, which is so odd, because how would they, you know, that Kittley address is near some of his family, some of his extended family. And then the other addresses, you know, one of them we went to and I knocked on the door and a guy comes out and he actually walks around the bar and he said, "Let me guess, you're looking for somebody that's missing." I said, "What?" He said, "You're like the third person that's come here looking for somebody that's missing." And he gave me the long story of all these different people that had come there looking for somebody that was missing. So then we thought that maybe their coordinates or maybe just every cell phone pings off of that main, you know, that main area. But for them to give us those coordinates and have us go traveling throughout the state of Indiana and then wonder why we're not in Texas looking for the soldier when you've told us that they're, that he's here. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it was a very bad time. I think a lot of my a lot of family members on Dakota side and, you know, friends at work who knew that I basically was getting up to come to work to work on this case and leaving work to go look for my son. They couldn't understand why I wasn't in Texas, and I did not want to get it out, you know, too quickly that they believed my son was in Indianapolis, because if he, something happened and he was upset, you know, I was just trying to be in his shoes. I thought, you know, I don't want to spook him and upset him or embarrass him, you know, have the media and everybody else saying, you know, this kid's AWOL and he's driven all the way back to Indianapolis. I wanted to keep it on the down low and I just wanted to find my son.
6 days after Dakota's disappearance, military officials contacted Patrice to let her know that they had entered him into the NCIC database. The National Crime Information Center is a central database that information is entered into that law enforcement officers from all over the country can access.
On the 16th is when the lead detective told us that Dakota was at, because they were helping us out so much, they entered Dakota in NCIC. So we felt really relieved by that, because we felt like that we finally, you know, with our local law enforcement, we had help finding Dakota, because if he was speeding or, you know, got pulled over for, you know, a brake light being out, you know, they were going to hold him because the military was looking for him. So we thought that was great. But at that time as well, because everything that we have been through, and we felt like the military was just, for some reason, I start feeling like they're not telling us the truth. We would stop, like when we were out searching for Dakota, 11, 12 o'clock at night, no matter what time it was, Paul actually stopped an IMPD officer, a local police department officer here, and asked them to run Dakota's name. Dakota was not entered in NCIC. I had a friend of mine who worked on IMPD. They ran Dakota's name. He was not in NCIC. So at that point, we knew they lied again. He was never entered into that system. So we had no backup, no help. And this is the day that, because I went to the media one more time, I felt with that pressure, that is when his command actually scanned me paperwork stating that Dakota was AWOL. And those papers, I went to our local sheriff's department And it took some, you know, some effort and, you know, crying and pleading as a mother, and her son is missing. You know, they, I think, felt sorry for me and basically told me they've never been involved in a missing soldier's case because they've never had to. Usually the military takes care of this, but they felt so bad for me that they went ahead and entered him. Finally, on the 16th is when I was able to get a missing persons report and enter him into that NCIC.
While Dakota's family was doing everything they could to find information and share that with the military police, they were not receiving much communication back.
I had another detective, a lady detective, that started working on Dakota's case, and she reached out to me. It was so horrible because it's like we were the only ones that were looking for Dakota, and we're trying to gather evidence and talk to people and search for him and drive all over the state of Indiana. And we would email her or call her, and Dakota's older brother was involved as well, and he lived in Florida. I mean, he was so independent, and I was so proud of him, but it really caused a lot of chaos for us trying to get phone records and, you know, trying to tap into bank accounts and Facebook accounts, and his brother was able to get into his phone records. But whenever we would give them information, you know, we had help from the girlfriend in Texas. Her mother was even recording conversations of friends back here in Indiana. They were calling, you know, the girlfriend and, you know, trying to talk to her. I mean, everybody was trying to do everything that they could and send information to these MPs. But when we would call for a status or an update, the only thing that we were told is it was very scripted, that they were doing everything they could to bring my soldier home safely. And it was an ongoing investigation, and they were working on it, and they were working the leads. And if they found out anything or they heard anything, they would call us and let us know. But they never called. I can only think of one phone call.
As Patrice's frustrations with the military police were growing, she decided to seek help from local law enforcement officials.
On the 21st, I actually got a phone call from an Indiana State Police trooper who I believe had seen Dakota's case probably on the media. I think he had a couple people reaching out to him, hey, you know, you should help this family. And this guy knew some of the sheriffs that, you know, we went to get the missing persons report and everything. And he was very concerned about Dakota because of a couple of the guys, you know, that Dakota was hanging out with when he had visited, you know, had come home for the wedding. And he said they were a couple of shady characters, and they had a little bit of a rap sheet, and Dakota had never, ever been in trouble. So he was very concerned about Dakota and started knocking on doors, and he was searching for Dakota. And he even offered up a reward to the area that he thought Dakota might be in. And he stayed in contact with me. He called me from home. I could hear his children in the background. I mean, that's how concerned and great this guy was. I mean, I really felt like, man, you know, what a outstanding state trooper. This guy just reaches out and offers up, you know, his help. He doesn't have to do this, but he just stayed in contact, and he was doing everything he could. He was going out and, you know, interviewing people and calling people. I think it was the 21st, the lady detective that had taken over the case, she had sent me an email and said, hey, can I have the name and number of the state trooper that you guys are working with? Because we want to make sure that all of our information is on the same page. And the next day, the one evening that I do not have that phone with me, I jump in the shower real quick to take a shower at 9 o'clock at night, and I get a call from the Indiana State Police. I missed that phone call, and I called right back. State trooper was not there. The lady said he just left, and I'll take a message and I'll have him call you. Well, I never heard back from him, so I called him the next day. I started emailing. I emailed several times, and the day after that Fort Hood asked for that gentleman's name and number, I never heard from him again. He would not return my phone calls. It was horrible. I mean, I just felt like, you know, we got smacked in the face again. I even, after things settled this year, I filed a complaint just so I could get some type of answer from that gentleman on why he did that to us. And once again, I mean, our government never replied to that complaint. So I thought that was pretty bad, but also just another weird thing that happened to us.
Military officials kept telling Patrice that Dakota was in Indiana, so she decided to hire a private investigator to see if they could track him down. What they found gave them some hope that he was still out there.
Yeah, we really still felt like that we, you know, this is the military. We have to believe what they're saying. Why would the military lie to us? You know, they have to be looking for Dakota. They have to be, you know, he's in Indiana. They're not lying to us. So we're up day and night searching for Dakota, not getting sleep, reaching out to people. But I thought, you know, I need a little bit of help. A private investigator group was suggested to me. They search for people via the computer through bank records, credit cards, debit cards. You know, they thought, man, you know, if Dakota's out here doing anything, since I couldn't get in his bank records or his Facebook account, I need help. So this private investigator, we hired this lady. And the first thing that she did was she not only helped me to get addresses for places that I thought Dakota might be, but she also sent Dakota a message to his email that basically said, you know, hey, Dakota, I'm a private investigator. Your mom hired me. She's very worried about you. I'm not connected to the police or the military or anything. But if you open this email, we're going to know that you're opening it. I can see it, that you opened it. So, but, you know, reach out to your mom, reach out to me, reach out to somebody. But if you open this, I can see it. Not only was that email opened one time on the October 27th, it was opened at 3:26 and 4:40 p.m. on October 27th. My thought is, wow, well, you know, if it was the military checking out Dakota's email, you know, I'm assuming that they would have said, hey, you know, this is the military. You know, that's why this email is being opened, or this is the police, or, you know, somebody, nothing. They were just opened. And, you know, I made sure that I called the girlfriend in Texas, the couple friends here. You guys don't have his passwords, right? You have nobody. And I know they would not be dishonest with me about that, because they were just working as hard as we were. I mean, they were trying to find Dakota and locate Dakota.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. On November 2nd, the military police contacted Patrice, asking her to send them some more information.
The lead detective emailed me requesting to cut his phone records, his bank records, and any other mail that was sent to our house, because apparently they had not got to that point yet, even though, you know, we're talking about 3 weeks here. They had not got to that point, but we had finally got that information. So I emailed her everything that I had. Every little piece of everything, so they knew Dakota's life. And the next day, Dakota's older brother, Dustin, was getting very frustrated. You know, he was just as upset as I was because they're very close. So he called the lead detective to get, hey, you know, you're not calling my mom. You know, I want, you guys got to give me an update here. What are you doing to help, you know, find my brother? And he was informed on that morning that they believe, now I never got a phone call on this, we had to call them. They believe Dakota was back in Texas, had bought something for $8 on iTunes with his debit card that we later proved was a reoccurring charge. He opened a new bank account, his phone was on airplane mode, and they were looking in Austin and Pflugerville, Texas for him.
When I had previously mentioned what I was working on for this week, I said that this episode was different from what I usually cover. That's because an hour after Dakota's brother had spoken to military police, his black Ford Mustang was found at Fort Hood and Dakota's remains were located just feet from the car. According to documents released by the Army, on November 3rd, C Company soldiers were conducting an informal sergeant's time training exercise to increase familiarity with land navigation. The area was not part of any official land navigation course, but the group of C Company soldiers had just set up an ad hoc land navigation course in order to facilitate extra training. This is a direct quote from the report. That exercise coincidentally caused a small group of soldiers to travel through the wooded area off Ivy Division Road on November 3rd, past the site of Private Stump's crash. When someone goes missing, the families are often left with nothing but questions and heartache. When a person is found, sometimes those questions remain unanswered and new questions arise. This is one of the reasons that I decided to cover Dakota's case, and the other reason is that his family is pushing to change how our military handles missing persons cases, so that other families don't have to go through what they went through while he was missing and what they're still going through now trying to get answers from the Army. After finding Dakota, Army officials changed their tune. They no longer believed that Dakota had left and gone to Indiana. They now believe that he had crashed his Mustang on the night of his disappearance. When Dakota left that night to go back out into the field, he only had to make a 2-minute drive. They claim that Dakota was traveling approximately 62 miles an hour in a 20-mile-per-hour zone. That's when they say he failed to make a 90-degree turn and drove straight off the road into a wooded area where the Mustang first hit a mound of dirt, which launched the car off a 20% grade, causing it to fly 98 feet before impacting the ground. It then became airborne again for 50 feet before hitting a tree stump. It then rolled and became airborne again for 70 more feet before coming to a rest on its side. Dakota was ejected from the passenger side window as the car rolled to a rest, and he landed just 10 feet north of the car. Incidentally, Dakota's family has been given 3 different locations for where this accident took place. There were no skid marks, no tire tracks, no one saw or heard a thing. After hearing the tragic news, his family and friends were left wondering about all the things that had occurred over the past 3 weeks and 3 days that pointed to Dakota being alive. Why had his phone pinged in Indiana? Why was an app uninstalled from his phone 2 days after the Army says he was dead? Who had opened that email from the private investigator, not just once, but twice? How is it possible that his phone stayed on for 6 days while people repeatedly attempted to call him? Dakota's family isn't trying to tell you that this is some big conspiracy. They just want answers because they've been told so many conflicting stories that they no longer know what to believe. If this is just a series of tragic mistakes, they don't want this to happen to any other families. The day after they found Dakota, a casualty assistance officer visited Patrice at her home in Indiana.
And the next day, immediately that morning, I mean, you could imagine, I'm still in shock, but I have a casualty assistance officer sitting at my home. I had the special agent from CID calling me, and he did not know, but Fox 59, which is a local news station, actually was sitting in my living room when he called me, and I put him on speaker. And he tried to explain that he was not found where the MP told me. He gave me a totally different street. It was first, you know, Turkey Run Road, and then it ended up being off Clear Creek and north, which is what he told us. And then he tried to explain that we tried to understand why we're, you know, you told us he was in Indianapolis. You've had us searching for 3 weeks and 3 days for my son. You know, how does this happen? You guys got a bad ping. And so I tried to explain while he's being taped by Fox 59 News that sometimes this just happens. You know, sometimes his wife will call him from another state and it will say that she's in another state and he doesn't understand phones. This is a lead detective for the criminal investigation division of the military. And he's telling me he doesn't understand, but sometimes they just get bad pings, and they didn't put him on the news. I'm sure they can't do that, but you know, they still have that recording because they're, I mean, everybody was just sitting there looking at each other like, this is unbelievable.
As you can imagine, by this point, Dakota's family had lost a lot of faith in officials from Fort Hood. They were relieved to learn that Dakota's autopsy would be conducted by the Office of the Armed Forces Medical Examiner at Dover Air Force Base.
And they also told us that Dakota was, as we were speaking, he was going through an autopsy at Dover. He said, at Dover. And it wasn't only myself. I know that I was under a lot of stress, and so was Paul, but my mother was sitting there and her companion. There were so many people that were sitting there and heard him say he's being autopsied at Dover. And we later found out when we received his autopsy papers that he was never at Dover. So we called CID and they explained to us that, no, we didn't tell you he was going to be at Dover. He was at Fort Hood being autopsied by someone who represents Dover. But everything was done at Fort Hood, Texas. And so the casualty assistance officer, you know, he was there discussing final arrangements and immediately was like, here, sign here. You need to sign over power of attorney for this car if you don't want it, which was a big mistake. I know now, but I didn't know at the time, and I was just so stressed. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to be talking about this, but we've never seen pictures of the car because they had total control over it.
On November 11th, 2016, Dakota was laid to rest. The Army sent a shadow box along with his remains, but the shadow box they sent belonged to another soldier. They told his family that they must have picked up the wrong one, but they now deny that this ever even happened. This mistake has led to even more questions.
We had a lot of issues with his funeral. We don't know what happened, but we talked to the funeral director after the funeral and was told that they never looked in the casket because they stepped back to respect the military to fix Dakota's uniform. So they could not verify that it was Dakota in that box.
We asked the funeral director because we have a lot of questions. So there's been so many mix-ups with Dakota's case and with his medals and his shadow box and all this. So we said, if this casualty assistance officer had the wrong, you know, shadow box, did we have the wrong soldier in the box, in the casket? Because, you know, the shadow box generally goes with the soldier. And he said, well, I didn't look in there, which just totally blew my mind that the person that we're paying to make sure, you know, I'm almost thinking that that's a law that if you're going to bury somebody, you have to know what's in the casket. How do you not look?
Yeah.
I mean, that's your responsibility to know what you're doing. And he's like, oh, well, I stepped back. What? You stepped back?
When they received Dakota's autopsy report with pictures, it raised even more questions. Dakota's remains were in an advanced state of decomposition and partially skeletonized, weighing just 32 pounds. There was some muscle left on his leg, and they were able to use that for a toxicology screen, which was negative, but that testing was limited due to the state of decomposition. They mentioned that there was no indication of animal activity, but there was one bone missing from his body. Dakota's hyoid bone has never been found. The hyoid bone is located in the neck and can often indicate if a person has been strangled.
And the autopsy states that there were clearly no animals. But the shirt that he was wearing, and I don't know why they turned it around. We have figured out that this is the back side of his shirt. His shirt has on each sleeve, they almost look like defensive cuts. And they're not rips. They are clearly cuts. And then there are two or three holes that would be on his back, like in his liver area, that look like stab holes to myself and Paul. They took a picture of his G-Shock watch, and it says 10:35, which Dakota went missing at. He left his barracks at 9:42. His watch appears to say Sunday, which is the same day that his phone was turned off. We found out that the first thing we noticed in the autopsy is that his hyoid bone was missing. So we made a huge, huge, huge stink about this. And the director of CID, who was at our house in April, told me that he felt so sorry for me that he went back out to the accident site and combed through it and ended up finding a tooth, part of his dog tag, Dakota's dog tag, and bone fragments, and that he sent them over to the medical examiner to make sure they're Dakota's, and sure enough, they were. And he's going to mail those to me, but we have not received those yet, just like his report. We were also told that when we made a big stink about Dakota's dog tags, that those were buried with him. They were on the end of his casket. And then later is when they told us they found a piece of his dog tag. There were pictures of Dakota's wallet and the contents of his wallet in the autopsy pictures. We made a big stink about that we wanted those things back. And they were lost for months. They could not find him. They didn't know where his Army ID, his driver's license, his debit card, and his wallet. They looked perfectly fine in the autopsy pictures. But because they couldn't find them, they later came back and said, oh, those were biohazards. So we had to bury those with your son. They were in a biohazard bag with his body. So that was another story that they came up with. They never could give us a clear story on the hyoid bone. And, you know, I researched that bone a lot, and that's why I made a big deal about it, because that's the bone that they can tell if you've been strangled. That's the only thing that's missing. Put on their own autopsy report that there were clearly no animals. So there wasn't an animal in Texas that drug off Dakota's hyoid bone. You know, I don't believe that.
Army officials sent Patrice the contents of Dakota's car. Inside, there was a receipt from before Dakota had ever set foot in Texas.
When we received his personal items from his car and from his room, that's like a whole day's conversation right there. But we noticed there was a receipt from a Lowe's that appeared to be in his car. It was wet and kind of moldy. A Lowe's store in Killeen, Texas, from November 30th, 2015. Dakota didn't get to Texas until July 15th, 2016. And we have it's got the person's name, the MasterCard number, everything where this person bought something from Lowe's. And we have reached out to person in Killeen, Texas that has the same name, asking her if this is her receipt, if she knows Dakota. And she just says, no, it's not hers.
Dakota's girlfriend has been searching for answers, too. She contacted one of the men that Dakota had been hanging out with the night that he disappeared. She wanted to see if she could get more information from him.
On the 24th is when Dakota's girlfriend in Texas reached out to private number one, just to see if he had anything else he wanted to say about Dakota's death. He texted her, and this was over Thanksgiving break of 2016. It was a Thanksgiving holiday. He told her that he was going to be in so much trouble because he currently had went AWOL. He snapped and left, something didn't add up about Dakota and that whole situation. And he was going back Sunday, and it was about time his statement is made.
A woman who worked at Fort Hood has contacted Dakota's family to let them know that she had requested to search the base, but they wouldn't give her permission.
Planter House is like the Ronald McDonald military. If you have a soldier that is hurt or in the hospital, his parents or siblings can go and stay at the Planter House, which is at Fort Hood. And a lady who represented Fort Hood reached out to me and told me that she sent an email to Dakota's command to search for Dakota on base.
Asking for permission to search.
Asking for permission to search. And she was denied. And she told us that she didn't want to get involved in fear of losing her job and that she was friends with the general. And I believe that that lady is no longer representing Planter House as well. She's gone for some reason.
One thing that hadn't been returned to the family was Dakota's phone. When I spoke to Patrice and Paul, they had put in a complaint about this, and since our interview, the phone was returned to them. The screen is broken, but they're trying to see if they can retrieve any useful information from it.
I made a complaint to our lieutenant governor, and I got a phone call yesterday that they're mailing me the phone, but I already know that that phone is going to be completely blank.
Yeah, they told us that they dumped the phone, and we said, well, if you dump the phone, can we get the information that was on the phone? So we don't have any proof of any of that, but, you know, we would like to see, you know, the dump. So what did you get off the phone?
From the beginning, when Dakota first went missing, they've been told conflicting stories regarding video surveillance on base. At first, they were told that it would take too much manpower to review the footage, and then they were told that they didn't even have any cameras.
Also, they indicated, because we wanted to see, you know, if Dakota is AWOL, he's missing, he's a deserter in essence, when did he leave base? Because we wanted to start working that. If he left base here, it would take, you know, probably at least 2 days to drive back to Indiana. Because you would have to sleep at some point. It's a long drive. And they said that they don't have any egress cameras. They don't have any cameras showing when somebody leaves. So originally they told us that it would take a lot of manpower to look at these cameras. Then they come back with, we don't have any cameras showing anybody leaving, which just doesn't make any sense. How do you not know, you know, I mean, this is supposed to be a military installation where there has to be a great deal of security. They don't have cameras showing people coming and going. None of this makes any sense.
Dakota's family doesn't know what to believe anymore. They've been misled so many times from the very beginning, and they've also been contacted by people who claim this is a cover-up, but they're too afraid to come forward due to the fear of retaliation. Patrice recently came across some pictures that look just like Dakota, and she reached out to the photographer to get more information.
In 2017, there was a picture. Just because of beliefs that I have, I still pay very much attention to pictures that come out, articles that come out, especially about Fort Hood. But there was a picture that looked just like my son. I sent it to a lot of people and said, hey, who's this look like? And everybody said the same thing. So I ended up contacting the person who took that picture and said, hey, you know, is this a picture that you got from the past? And
was it a stock photo?
Yeah, was it a stock photo? Or is this an original photo? And he guaranteed me that no, that photo was taken on that day and it's an original photo. And he wanted to know why. And he was a soldier. But he does all of the photography, you know, for the Army. He wanted to know why. And so I told him and he said, ma'am, I can't speak to you anymore. I'm going to have to talk to a supervisor. And he blocked me. That happened. I thought that was really, really very odd. There's just so many things, so many questions that we have. We're very concerned. I don't think we really know what happened to Dakota. I do feel like something's being covered up. We just don't know what to believe anymore. I'm very concerned about the platoon sergeant. Because I feel like, why would you lie if you have nothing to cover up, especially with a missing soldier? You know, you guys are supposed to be a band of brothers. They never looked for Dakota. It was almost like it wasn't real. They made jokes about it on his Facebook in the beginning because I really feel like these guys had no clue what was going on. They thought Dakota, man, he just lost his mind for a minute and he'll be right back. But this platoon sergeant gives me a lot of concern over his statements, and knowing that Dakota got into the altercation with him, and the two guys that he was last known with, they concern me because they have made different statements. And I just feel like unless you have something to hide, you're not going to lie. You're going to tell the same story over and over because it's the truth.
Another odd thing happened recently.
The last thing I guess I can only add that was odd is a cousin that he was very, very close to a couple months ago reached out to me and said, hey, you know, I sent Dakota a message in January on Snapchat just because, you know, that's what we do. We still reach out. And she said that message was opened a couple months ago. She is the only person that I have heard anything like that from, but that one of those messages on Snapchat was opened. And it just happened to be his very close cousin.
I don't have Snapchat, so I don't know how it alerts you if something's open, but she was she was shooken up about it because she, you know, she still, of course, you know, reaches out to him like we, you know, still post on his Facebook page or what have you. But, you know, for her to say, wow, you know, Dakota's Snapchat, somebody accessed his Snapchat.
And this was after, you know, pretty much everything was done. They told us the investigation was over.
I know that we've thrown a lot of information at you in this episode because Patrice and Paul have gathered so much. They even sent me hundreds of pages to review myself. He had come back for a 4-hour refit after spending several days in the field. He allegedly hung out with two fellow soldiers during that 4-hour period. They've said that the three of them went over to the post exchange where the 23-year-old purchased a bottle of alcohol. Their stories on what brand it was vary. Also, they claim that Dakota had told this man to take $20 to $40 out at the ATM, but records show that $80 was taken from his account. During this time, a video was posted on Dakota's Snapchat account. It's a strange video because no one's quite sure what the meaning of it was. It appears to be taken from the driver's seat of Dakota's car, and it's showing someone in his back seat with some music playing in the background. But you never see or hear Dakota. Then, they allegedly went back to the barracks where they played video games, and Dakota did his laundry. During this time, they've stated that Dakota took several shots of the alcohol that they'd purchased. When it came time for Dakota to leave, he became flustered because he couldn't find his keys. He eventually found them, and according to these two men, Dakota sped off. Their stories also don't quite match up on who was there when he left. The place that he was going was only about a 2-minute drive or a 7-minute walk from the barracks. Dakota was supposed to be back at 9:50 p.m. that night, and at 9:42 p.m., he received a call from a platoon sergeant who he had recently gotten into an altercation with. This platoon sergeant has given different accounts of that phone call. That was Dakota's last call. In the days that followed, many strange things happened. Military officials claimed that Dakota had gone to Indiana based on his phone pings. Since finding his remains, they've claimed that these were just bad pings or that they pinged the wrong phone number. 2 days after he disappeared, the Facebook Messenger app on his phone was uninstalled. Patrice hired a private investigator who sent a link to an older email account that Dakota had from before he went into the military. The email was opened and the link was clicked on once at 3:26 p.m. and again at 4:40 p.m. on October 27th. I have so many questions about this case. If his accident happened between where Dakota was that night and where he was going, which was only a 2-minute drive, why didn't they search that area for him? Why didn't they search the video footage to see if he had ever even left? They've claimed that it would have taken too much time, and other times they've said that they didn't have video surveillance. After speaking to several members of the military, I do not believe that there was no video surveillance. Even if it took time to review the cameras, wouldn't that have saved all the time that was spent chasing him down in other states? Dakota's family has been put through so much since he went missing that they now question everything, down to whether or not it's really Dakota that they laid to rest. They were told that the Army confirmed his identity with a DNA test, but with all the reports that they've sent, none of them contain proof that a DNA test was ever conducted. They've gotten to the point where they're considering having his remains exhumed for further testing. When I spoke to Patrice and Paul, they told me that they aren't looking for answers only for themselves, but for other families who are in the same position. They've started a petition to push for legislation that they're calling Dakota's Law. They want to change how the military handles missing persons cases. I will include a link to the petition in the show notes. Whether you think what happened here is a series of unfortunate mistakes, or you believe that this is some kind of cover-up, it's clear that Dakota's case should have been handled differently. If military officials want to clear up some of this confusion, I think that showing pictures of the car or the scene of the accident would go a long way. Why haven't they done that? Also, showing Dakota's family the results of the DNA test confirming that those were, in fact, his remains may put his family at ease. People have asked me why I decided to cover Dakota's story since his case is so different from what I usually cover, and I have so much respect for members of our military. I think his case was mishandled, and I wanted to shine a light on this issue, since it's something that we don't hear about often. That brings us to the end of episode 104. I'd like to thank Patrice and Paul for taking the time to speak with me. If you would like to follow this case, you can find more information on Facebook at Justice for Dakota. I will also include a link for that in the show notes. I'll be closing this episode with a recording that Dakota took of himself. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. You can find me on Facebook, where there's both a page and a private discussion group. I'm on Twitter at TheVanishedPod and on Instagram as TheVanishedPodcast. I've got one more episode left for 2017, and then I'll be taking 1 week off and returning the first week of January. So join me again next week. Thanks for listening.
If I die before you. price to pay if I die before you awake.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.